You, I just was warning you.
Okay.
A, about the R, I, the risks.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough.
But you like R, O, R, I, but you like risks.
Risks, yeah.
We, S, A, we saw you on Stony Burke's show
yep.
on BTV.
Yeah.
The, and, you, were, T, A, talking mm-hmm. about I intimacy A as a R radical A act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, definitely. That's a part of what the book is about and what my workshop is about, teaching about love and teaching it in a form that's sort of, again, pushing the boundaries, you know? Pushing the boundaries on how people usually define relationships and define love and intimacy. Getting them to think about things in a different way.
What is intimacy?
Wow, that's a good one. Can I read my definition? Do you mind if I read my definition? Yeah. It's a good question. Intimacy, or making love, or being loving, is anything and everything you put your heart into, including intercourse, a handshake, kissing, a love letter, a peace offering, S&M, art, music, masturbation, fetishes, fantasies, a phone call, a warm embrace, whatever pleases you, whatever feels good. The sky is the limit. I dare you to count the ways you can single-handedly make love to the planet, or yourself, or your best friend, or your new lover.
S. So, what is L. O.
Love.
Love.
I'm asking people to step out of what society has given us as a formula for what love is and what love's supposed to be, which I think is based on some fantasy about what Hollywood or our parents or religion or mainstream media tries to sort of put into our minds about how we define what love is. And I'm asking people to go out and do the work and search within themselves for what love means. I don't think there's any one definition, and I certainly don't have the definition that answers that for everyone. I think that's the work that needs to be done, that people need to take that time to ask themselves what love really is and to question how we've been influenced about what love is.
Is F A L L falling in love D I different than L love?
Is falling in love different than love? It's a very subjective question. And I don't even know if I have an answer for that. I would say that love is like a larger umbrella for all of us to decide what love means to us. And I think that a component of that love is that falling, is that vulnerability, that letting go, that submitting and surrendering to what love could be or has the potential to be.
I F O F I find F A falling in love is A B L O a block to love.
Do I find?
Frank said he finds.
He finds that.
It is.
Can you explain further what you mean?
The that P E P R P E people then have to W get people then have to get T H R through or D R O or drop or W O R or work T H through before they S E settle down to the L O love if in fact love is there.
Wow. You're a real deep guy. I'm really being challenged here. I gotta wake up. Where's my coffee?
W E E L W E well I have I have been doing this for 30 some years, so yeah, it gives them a chance to get deep.
Yes.
Yeah. At L, at least 30 some years.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've known you for almost 30 years, and he was doing it before I knew him.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a testimonial to love.
We four are in what is it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a funny thing because love almost seems not as willful as what I would say we are in. Mm. Because what we are in is more, like, committed. And, you know, love is involved. But it's, I mean, I feel like I love just about everybody I meet. You know what I mean? Mm. It's hard to not love somebody. That's my experience of people. You know, you just kind of meet somebody and you just love them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's just the way it is. But so that's different than what we have, because what we have is more like a commitment to be together thick and thin, mm-hmm. work things mm-hmm. out, right. put the relationship first. Right. And mm-hmm. so that kind of creates something that has mm-hmm. more substance to right. it. R-E-S, responsibility? No. R-E-S, respond? Mm-hmm. Respect?
Right.
Mm. It's respecting our relationship with each other and mm. yeah,
and
treating
honor.
It with respect
yeah.
and honor. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's a life partnership. It's a commitment to something longer term, not just someone you pass on the street and feel an affinity or a kindredness with.
Mm. Yes, three. That is what I... C A call I intimacy. What is what you call intimacy? L O long the long term relationship is what you call intimacy.
Yeah.
I was M E, E, meeting with some one L A last week and she said she D A N C E danced I N intimately oh with someone at a dance event I said that is not really intimacy.
Right.
It may be it's cutting out. It may be I intimate I N T E N it may be intense. And R I S K risk and risky risking.
Yeah.
But it's not intimacy.
Okay, I understand more clearly how you're differentiating it. It's not about sex and it's not about even physicality. Or proximity. Mm-hmm. It has more to do with the intentions that two people have and the commitment that they make towards a friendship or a loveship or however you want to. Yeah, I think those are important. I think I make those distinctions as well. I think people spend a lot more time thinking that it's something physical and that it has to be sexual in order for it to be love.
Or... I, N, T, intense,
or intimate. Yeah.
Well, they think it's got to be intense.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. B. In. A. In a way. It. Is. E. A. Easier to be intense in that way. W I with someone who you would who you would will
like
who you will not S, see again. Who you will not see again.
Yeah, it's safer. Yeah. Safer. Yeah.
That is R O romance, romantic, romance.
Yeah, there's no vulnerability really involved.
It L O O it looks like there is on the surface.
On the surface.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, it takes someone to be really vulnerable and open up their heart and speak from a place of trust and to really be on a loving way.
And to S T A stay, and to stay in that, not have it be just a
right.
one or
a
two
fleeting
shot thing,
right? Yeah, like a one night stand.
Yeah. Or a Y or a year stand in that.
Right, I agree. Yeah.
After a after a year, the relationship, the R O romance
wears off,
starts to fade. Yeah, it wears off.
Yeah,
and the P I pictures, the pictures you had of what the relationship is also start to break down, and I end up what the other person, what the other person is about those pictures that you had of the person start to break down
right.
after a year.
That ties into sort of your love as an evolutionary thing, where it isn't just the honeymoon phase that makes what love, like long-standing love, commitment love, is something much deeper. Yeah. That's hard to explain to someone. People who've been watching Hollywood movies and want some kind of fantasy illusion, you know, a love that just stays ignited and high and intensified all the time. Mm-hmm. Long-term love isn't like that. I was in a 13-year relationship, so I know what that feels like. I know the difference between a 2-week, a 2-year, and then it's over. 13 years is a different kind of commitment to someone.
Not a P E A K, not a peak, like a peak experience.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's important to know that difference because you can ride something with a lot of enthusiasm in the beginning, but then you don't really know that person, really. You don't really know that. You don't know what they're like when they're in a bad mood. You don't know how they. How their perspective on life, how they're going to treat you when they're angry, how they respond. There's a lot more going on than just what's going on in bed.
And if you don't S-E-C the person A as who they, if you don't see the person as who they
really are,
or who they really are, How can you
love them?
Love them
fully, yeah.
Or R E respect them.
Yeah.
Or to B L O loyal. Loyal to them, or to be loyal to them.
Right. This is true. I agree with you. I don't know how you explain or teach that to people, but we lead by example. You know, we lead by example and.
I have tried to figure out how to teach that to people or to show it to people for over 30 years. Frank always says, I know how life works, I just can't figure people out. Because it's, you know, he kind of lays things out for people and it seems like it doesn't, you know, and they'll appear to get it, but then they'll, you know, choose something that seems like it's not really in their own best interest, you know, at some point, and they just go, okay, what, who, what is your W.O. workshop like?
I'm asking people to broaden their notion of what a relationship is. And I think people have a tendency to think that there's just one formula and you meet your perfect significant other and then they create this sort of hierarchy, this mountaintop, and that everyone else that they love is on the bottom. And I'm trying to get people to imagine that it's a more even playing field. You have family and friends and lovers and your partner, and all of them are important in your life. And that this hierarchy is created by a society that doesn't want us to imagine that there's more options.
It wants to isolate us from each other.
Yes. Yes. And not create community.
That is R E A L. Really? What we are T.A. talking about creating community.
Yeah. Building bridges, building friendships, learning from each other.
What do you do in the workshops?
Basically, I lay out a presentation that's maybe 15, 20 minutes of just my basic framework of a sort of feminist, anarchist perspective on what love could be or the potential of. And I sort of break down my definitions of what love and relationships and open relationships are. And then I create a discussion because I don't come as an expert or someone that knows all the answers. I don't have the answers. But I would like to create a safe space for people to talk about what a relationship could be or how we work on jealousy, how we work on community. And so I mean, basically it's a discussion group and a support group.
What do they say
In the workshop? Oh. Most people bring up their struggles and challenges with relationships. A lot of people, because it's under a kind of polyamory umbrella, people oftentimes come in and feel like they have no support, they have no role models.
What is polyamory? Mm. Define that for people.
I really hate that word. For me, polyamory is redefined to mean the freedom to love as many people as you choose. The right to love people in the way that you want to love them.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Okay. Why do you hate the word?
It has a little bit of a stigma to it that's from the 70s, and it doesn't translate well in my generation. Mm-hmm. The anarchist punk scene, which is what my roots are, that's what I come from, the sort of punk anarchist scene, get a little bit hung up on that polyamory word.
What? What is a... What is the... H... O... O... Hook? They get hung up on? He's asking what is the hook that they get hung up on?
I think it's just a language thing. I think just language can be cumbersome and problematic, and so in my attempt to redefine what relationships mean and what love means, I wrote the book for a certain audience that I wanted to read, some people that are very jaded about what love is or jaded about what an open relationship means, and so I prefer to use the word open relationship as opposed to polyamory, because polyamory for me doesn't encompass monogamous couples, and to me you can have radical love even if you're monogamous. It's more of a philosophy and a way of life.
M-O-N can monogamy be
radical?
W I with more than one person?
Sure. If people are able to open their minds and their hearts and imagine that it can be anything that they define it or work it out to be, as long as guidelines are respected and...
How?
In my book, oftentimes I talk about guidelines, that's how you build a foundation of trust between couples. If you want like a long-standing relationship, you have to have some kind of trust. And you establish that trust by agreeing on certain mutually agreed upon rules or guidelines. And if a monogamous couple wants love in different ways and wants to expand what their notion of their relationship could be or has the potential to be, I think they could still be monogamous and invite others to be loving members in that monogamous union. Again, it would be open. It would be an open relationship, but they might, I think monogamous and non-monogamous are not very useful terms anymore for me. I mean, I think.
Yes. S. B. E. Because. What. We. Are. Talking about, really talking about, is C-O-M-M, community. No, C-O-M-M-I. Committed.
Commitment.
Committed.
Committed.
R, relationship. It could have two or three or four or whatever people involved in it. That is not the S-A, that is not the same as O, open relationship. Is that what you said? That's not the same as open relationship.
I might disagree. I mean, to me, to be loving out in the world, to go out and step out my front door and be loving with people might, I mean, if my heart is open and I'm receiving people with respect and love and understanding and communication and honesty, then in a way I'm making love to them, even if it's only philosophically or...
That is... J, just what every H E A L healthy person does. What you're talking about? The difference between, you're trying to establish a difference between an open relationship and a committed relationship. Well, I mean, what is an open relationship then? I mean, because I know what a committed relationship is. A committed relationship is however many people are involved and they have, like you're talking about the guidelines, they've committed to be in relationship together according to some guidelines that they all understand or establish in some way. So that's what a committed relationship. But to me, it seems like that can also be an open, but I don't even know exactly what an open relationship means. You know, does an open relationship mean what? What does that mean, open relationship?
I think it means whatever you want it to mean. I mean, your definition might be different than mine. I don't think
because
there's any
say,
one.
Like what I could think is that, well, okay, so you have, like, so many people in this committed relationship, but they're open to meeting another person that would want to also be part of that committed relationship. So does that make them a committed open relationship? You know what I mean? If that's what an open relationship means. Because they could say, we're committed and that's it. We don't want anybody else in this relationship.
Right.
It's just the 10 of us or it's just the 4 of us or whatever. So that would be a committed non-open relationship if you thought of open as being open to letting other people into what you have in that committed relationship.
But even if you're closed with those 4 or 10 people,
yeah,
it may change and evolve. Someone might move out of that group, or someone might come into that group. So it's still open.
So
it's
that's what open means.
It just might
changes?
Be restrictive over time, or I don't know. I'm not saying it is or it isn't.
Right, because it seems like that's just gonna happen whether you
plan
it that way or not.
Right.
In the 70s? O. No. P. P. Open. Relationship. Meant. You could have sex with somebody else, right? No. Yeah. Yeah. In S, separate,
relationship. Mm. And Jay, you, and juggle.
Mm.
Yeah. That's not what I'm... That's not my philosophy. Mm-hmm.
I, N, I never had, I never have seen that work.
So have I, not successfully, not long term.
I did R E relationship counseling in the 70s for a number of years. Frank did relationship counseling. I and when A O open relationship C came in for counseling at first all the people in the relationship said everything was great. Everybody was happy. Everybody felt good about it. But after you dug W V very L very little, after you dug very little, one or more of the people were not really happy. They T H O they thought they were They should be happy. But F E but felt L E let down L E left out. They felt left out. Not G O good. Not good enough. They T H O they thought they were J jealous when where in F in fact
okay.
it they were R E A really L E left out R E really being T O told you don't
matter.
M E E meet all my needs. So
I think for me, nobody, no one person can meet all my needs. And I don't feel bad about that. that I admit that not one person can meet all my needs, that I have needs that are met by different people in different ways. But I would imagine a lot of people have relationships that are open and are not satisfied, and they don't have role models or guidebooks or helpful suggestions to get them on the path where they're communicating about what their needs are and how to feel more revitalized in the kind of love that they're trying to build upon. And I don't think we really have good role models. You know? I wonder what's going on with those people that is sort of setting them up for something that, an ideal that maybe doesn't exist. I don't know. I believe there can be healthy, open relationships, whether they're open only with four people or whether they're open with multiple people. I think people need to form those families and those circles of love in creative ways. But it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy.
We need to see our create a L A N a language to talk about this kind of thing. B because it's that was our experience back when Frank started talking about what we now call aeroplay. He would say, well, it's like it's being physical with another adult, but it's not sexual, but there's no limits. And people would, like, you have sex, it's erotic, so like people had all these pictures that went with all the words, and we always found it difficult to really communicate what we were talking about. And Frank kept saying, it's the language. The language is the problem. There aren't words. It's like there's sex.
Right.
You know? And so, one day he said, okay, I'm going to call it aeroplay, what I'm talking about. And boom, it just completely opened up. Because then when you tell somebody, you describe it, you say it's called aeroplay, it seemed like something clicked with people. And once we got started on that, he just went nuts with creating words, but because it works.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm doing the same work as you. I'm trying to create a language that has not satisfied me or expressed what I'm really thinking and feeling philosophically, because language is limiting, but I'm not giving up. I'm working really hard to create something that expresses what I need to get out there, but mostly I'm asking people to do that within them. Not that I have to offer this language, but that they do that work themselves. It's very subjective, you know?
One PR problem is JU juggling, S juggling, S what juggles what juggling what they S E C as S E separate are relationships, juggling what they see as separate relationships.
For me, it's kind of not a very far stretch to go from relationships to friendships. We don't have a problem juggling a few friends and to have this, and I mean committed, important friendships. Not just an acquaintance, but someone you've made a real lasting friendship with, and juggling people that may be lovers, and not necessarily sexual lovers. Again, we're hung up on language to make lover mean sex, but a lover that you're in some loving capacity with, be it love letters or be it non-touching or platonic or sexual. To me, the same work is going on. In a way, they're not very different from each other, the friendship and the lovership and the relationship. You can make a multiple commitment to all of them. And
but I find when you J, when you juggle, you E D R O P drop some of the B balls.
I would say people who can't juggle all those commitments should not be in multiple relationships with too many people. I mean, I feel what you were describing, that I have a capacity to love many people. It's just loving them in different ways and in different capacities. I want to love the homeless guy on the street that I just had a 5-minute conversation as much as I want to love my mother, or I want to love, I mean, you know, or people that you, I mean, I feel such an enormous love. It's hard to just zero it and narrow it down to one person. So I do a lot of work to juggle creatively. Whether or not I'm successful, I don't know, but that is what I'm trying to do.
Do you? R-E-A. Really? S. See that them as E separate all those different relationships all those different experiences of loving different people. Do you really see them as separate?
I see it as building community. That we're not so separate.
E. Exactly.
In some ways, it's seeking the tribal community. They're seeking the community that is smaller and smaller by seeing us all as one, as opposed to the way our society imposes upon us to think of each other as so separate. Your child is your child, not mine. And your old grandmother is your responsibility, not mine. And that has never agreed with me. I don't want that. I want to see that old woman on my street as my grandmother, someone I can help and be a part of her life and maybe make a difference, maybe share some love with her. And lift her spirit. Who knows? Maybe she'll lift my spirit. That's the kind of love I want. Not separate.
What are you thinking? That is what humanity was you built upon, built from, built for. That's what humanity was built for, for that. Yeah. Why all of this S E separateness is G V very R E. Recent.
Yeah. I would say indigenous cultures have lived for thousands of years building community quite successfully based on a more communal love. There was no I, there was only we.
Mm.
And I think that somehow we took a path that has led us into this individualistic, capitalistic way of thinking that doesn't allow us to see the we anymore. Your cells, my cells, the blood in you, the blood in me, it's all the same. Our way of thinking now has separated us from each other and put us in these physical bodies.
Mm.
And that we don't see our spirituality anymore, our spiritual connectedness, and our whole survival is dependent upon it. I don't think we can save the planet without seeing a spiritual community, not separate individual people.
Mm. Would Kay? Would Kirsten? R. Reed? F. Fuse?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I'll get it. Mm-hmm. It's not in there.
Oh, goodness.
This is a poem Frank wrote.
Oh, good.
Fuse. We are standing before a gate, on the edge of newness, holding hands. All bodies desire to merge with, to fuse with, the core of every body. Within closeness, core within all cores. This is the hidden secret of gravity. It is not a mere attraction of bodies, not sexual, but this desire has been long thought of as impossible in this reality of divisions. Impossible because of unwillingness to melt bodies and forms, to melt through skin, to melt beings with the other, going through layers until cores fuse into just life. But the time has come for fusion, a blend of explosions and implosions outside of time and space, deep within our body, peeling away layers by deep friction of warm love. Time has come to start to fade out the reality of division by lighting the fuse within the small hidden cave between our bodies, going within the warmth. The reality of division started when the cell of life divided and kept dividing. This reality of difference released the possibilities of personal love and creativity, the possibility of personal responsibility, and being in aware relationship with the other. But before the pyramids, a blink of an eye within an evolution, the reality of division became civilization, becoming a filter used by the elite to turn evolution into progress that benefited their empires of isolation. Yes, we are standing before a gate on the edge of newness. When we light the fuse within the hidden cave, it will release unimagined possibilities. It will release what has been locked up and away for so long. Get the foot off the neck of dreams. Get the weight of the world off the little kid's back. Release the deep beating heart from the tight cage. It may release blasts of tears, pain, joy, giggles. It will release life, full of wonder, deep inside our body. Together, we will take the blasts within us, expanding us in all directions. We don't even know what fuse is. It may not be any particular act. We are just following it deeper, going past taboos, going beyond language, just going on a journey within between our bodies, within our trust. We will make our report after we return from the merged core and after we discover a new language. Life itself survives at all because of the secret journeys of the dismissed within the small caves of love, personal trust, and passion beyond taboo.
It's beautiful.
Would you read? Would Wendy read one of her poems?
Okay. Actually.
Is it still cutting out?
No, okay.
This one's called My Path. Let them dissect my thoughts. They'll never find what they're after. I feel the pull, the weight of a lie, heavy in my mouth, this full disclosure. I feel the pull. I want only freedom without ownership, the door wide open. I want only love in its limitless capacity, no fear of the unknown. I feel the pull, no one to hold me back, no one to tell me how to live, no one to block my path. Living my life, Emma reminds me again, to demand nothing less from myself. I am a force that cannot be reckoned with. Sort of a free writing on love.
Mm-hmm. How? Yes. Were you? D R O P drop on your head? Were you dropped on your head at
birth?
At birth? Why are you R-A radical?
Why am I radical? Because I'm alive and I'm a free thinking revolutionary woman. I mean, I'm radical because I think for myself. I'm sorry, did I interrupt you?
Why do you think for yourself? When did this W E I R weird I L L illness S strike you S T A start? When did this weird illness start?
Illness is a strange word to choose. I think as a young child, at least from my parents' description, I was always very rebellious. I refused to be put in a box and look like other people and act like other people and smell like other people and relate like other people. Stop. Do you want me to stop?
No.
Oh, and so...
Are we smelling you?
Oh. I think I've liked fucking with people's reality and carving out some freedom for myself, not based on what other people tell me how to look and act and...
What was the F? What was the first, your first experience of that?
Mm. God, there's so many things that make someone radicalize their mind or politicize their thoughts. But for me, I mean, a big deciding factor was when I was 9, I remember telling this woman, this girl in my school, she was 9, she was my best friend, that I loved her. And she said, yeah, I love you too, you're my best friend. This is at school. And I said, no, I love you. And I said it like a Hollywood movie. And she went, I love you too, you're my best friend. And I said, no, Denise, I love you. And she didn't get it. She just walked away. She's like, we're going to be late for class. I'm out of here. So that's some deciding life moment where I realized, wow, I love someone, and they don't love me the same way in return. And then and that's okay. I love her as a friend, but I also have a capacity to love her in a different way. And I knew I was different. I knew I loved women and men and people of all genders, and that just created a kind of, I mean, I just sort of always knew I was different. I was never going to fit in. I was never going to be like other people. I was always going to think outside the box and want to expand the way other people, you know, perceive reality.
So, how did you M-A-D-E make A-L-I a life out of that?
I'm a really independent, self-reliant person who was okay with the fact that some people would just never understand or agree with me or accept me, that I could forge something that I didn't need. I didn't need a big group of support. I mean, I sort of worked out my own terms, you know. I mean, I guess I found a family of support in the punk scene, other people who were sort of misfits, trying to think for themselves, trying to redefine things differently, you know, a political community that...
Where did that happen?
Oh, Southern California. Yeah. L.A., Pomona. I grew up in Pomona.
I G grew up in... S. A. San Bernardino.
Oh my God! You poor soul. You have my complete sympathy.
E. Exactly.
It's a great breeding ground for. I mean, it's a breeding ground for conformity, and so for those of us who want to non-conform, we just move north. Get the heck out of there.
I could not. He couldn't easily get out because he's the, you know, the crippled guy living with mom and trying to get out and it not happening easily. He was in college and he tried moving out of the house a few times and, you know, it didn't exactly work. And he's about ready to graduate and he's still not out. I wanted to L M move here. Yeah, he said he would sit in his room fantasizing about being a hip artist in San Francisco.
I followed in your footsteps.
But I am, I moved to, he moved to Santa Fe. That's how he got out of out of the house. He met a kind of an older hippie woman that said, hey, you can just move with me. She, you know, she was kind of the hippie lady that all the college kids hung out at her pad. Right. And she said she was moving to Santa Fe. She said, boy, I wish I could. And she said, well, why don't you just come live with me?
Wow.
And that's how he got out.
Wow.
Lived with her for a year.
How'd you get up here?
roundabout. From her, he went to Massachusetts, and he lived in New York for a while. B. A. Back. To. He moved back to Santa Fe and lived in Albuquerque. And B. A. Back. To. S. A. San. He moved back to San Bernardino. Mm-hmm. That was right before here. Because she had... she rented him this incredible pad she had. It was like land with a couple of buildings and a pool, and it would have been perfect for him for workshops and theater stuff and everything. He said, but the only problem was there was no people. You know, he had a great setup, but no people. Yeah. So, I... went to Esalen in Big Sur to try to get them to let me do workshops. My workshop there. And they were the ones that suggested Berkeley. They said you should go to Berkeley. That will be, you know, what you're looking for. S. So we D drove up to Berkeley, stayed in the motel, checked it out, decided to move here. A L O a lot of F R E fresh P people to to sign up for workshops and do things with a fresh batch.
Much better received here. A lot more open-minded people. A lot of diverse views here.
How? What? When? When?
Did I come here?
Did you come here?
86. Came to Oakland. Stayed here. I lived in Sonoma County for about 4 years, but I've been at, the Oakland has been my home for the last 19 years.
I was and you have B E E you have been A P E R performer performance artist what ever whatever that is.
Yeah, I've been doing spoken word and poetry and radical performance art and theater for about 15 years, but trying to sort of bring spoken word in a community that's not used to hearing poetry, like punk shows and art gatherings and places where you don't expect to hear someone get up and do art. Rather than just poetry featured readings at cafes. I do that as well, but I prefer to read at places where people don't expect to hear poetry, especially like a punk scene where you've got people drinking beer and they're just waiting for the band to play, and then I get up there and read and shake things up a bit and get them to think and teach, you know, communicate something a little more meaningful than just music.
Do they ever THR throw things at you?
No, but they yell not very nice things. People have asked me to show my tits, and they're not, there's not always support. But I do it anyways, because it's, you know, what you do.
I have opened for bands B L Black Flag was the worst, because they had a pretty rough audience.
Yeah.
And actually, the audience freaked out our cast, because this is when we were performing at the Mabuhay in the late 70s. So we performed every week for 3.5 years. And so we had this happen over and over and over again. Whenever Black Flag played on a Saturday night, we were the early show. And finally, Frank figured out a way to deal with it. He said, park me on the stage. So he would be just kind of front, you know, to one side. And the show would just be going on independent of Frank. But whenever the crowd would start yelling or throwing things, he would just start yelling right back at them.
Good.
And boy, did that shut them off. They didn't know what to make of him.
Wow.
You know?
Wow, that's so great.
And so, and it got to where he wouldn't have to do much.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It, you know, and that's the way we handled them.
Well, you're fearless. And I think your presence and your visibility are really important, especially to that crowd who claim they're so alternative, and yet they're not doing the work to incorporate everyone.
In L.A. Yeah, we had a punk story in L.A. This was when it was just Frank and I traveling around, and we'd get bookings in punk clubs, but it would just be Frank singing along with taped music. That's it, you know, for like however long the set was.
Right.
Half
right.
hour, 40 minutes.
Right.
C-O-R. And they were corny songs. They weren't like songs that were hip and happening at the time. So we'd do Sonny and Cher. And, you know, Joe South and just all these really corny songs. And the one club we did in downtown LA, I forget the name of it, the Anti Club. It was a weekend night. Place was packed. Hardcore. They were all hardcore bands. And then Frank. And, they just started screaming and throwing things at him right at the beginning. I was in the dressing room, and the band, one of the bands that were going to be on after, who didn't know I was with Frank, they were saying, this is the most pathetic thing I have ever seen. Why do they leave a guy like that out of the institution? And that was the vibe of the club. I mean, they were just like,
was
really.
Was this the 70s?
No, this was 80-something, you know, before 85, somewhere between 82 and 85. And, but Frank, you know, we'd spent 3.5 years at the Mabuhay, so this was like nothing.
Right.
You know? So he just came on all the stronger, singing along these, you know, really corny songs. By the second song, it had started to slow down. By the third song, they were just quiet. You know, they were just kind of like looking. By the fourth song, they were like singing along.
No, it was great.
There were a couple of guys who had been particularly physical, like just like pulling at his foot and his leg in a rough kind of way.
Wow.
By like the fourth or fifth song, they're up on the stage with gingerly at first.
Right.
But they were up on the stage rubbing his shoulders while he was singing.
Wow.
By the end of the set, they had put like a whole bunch of their punk jewelry on, and he had like spike bracelets and skull necklaces, which we still have.
That's really cool.
And then at the end, you know, everybody started applauding. They wanted like an ovation kind of thing. And that same bunch of people in the dressing room that had said that had gone out and come back, and then they're going,
this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. This guy's inspirational. Yeah. He's wonderful. Yeah. It was, you know.
Well, and you're breaking new ground. I mean, you're allowing people to see that you're beautiful and that you're intelligent and that you have so much to offer and bring to the community and that we need to make room for you and space.
No. I am a I make R O O I make room for yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Mm. Yeah. Good job.
Can Kirsten E S C describe us for
us for
I'll use your mic too.
Oh, right.
Well, I feel like our relationship is a home, and yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot lately. That it's a home, and it's like we're one organism. And that makes big ripples together.
How did it H A happen?
How did it happen? Well, I feel like I can only speak about since I've been here, and from what I see, what I perceive was going on with the three of you, you know, just coming into your lives at the very beginning, I guess it happened from trust, you, Linda, and Frank met, and you had a high degree of trust in each other, and the love that came with being with each other and trusting each other just seemed like it had room for other people in it. And you met Mikey, and, you know, he, like, talking about making room for yourself, he made room for him, for himself in that, and, you know, because it was available the way it was with you two. And then I guess I made room for myself in that trust. It just kept expanding, and, you know, with help, with a lot of help of learning how to trust. I mean, you know, it's what I've always craved, is that deep, you know, deep trust and deep love, and so just kind of melting in it, and the friction of all the baggage that really doesn't make room for trust falls away by the friction of being together, of, you know, melting, of touching and feeling, and being willing to keep feeling and just be there for each other. And it's hard to talk about, but I guess those are some of the elements of how it's happened. What was the original question? Describe the relation. How did it happen? Yeah, how did it happen? Right, how did it happen? God, just the bottom line, I guess, is trust all the way, you know, from the Genesis here, what you two shared and with Mikey, and then the way that was, it was like if somebody wanted to share, you know, if I wanted to share in that because of what it was, you know, I could be part of that. Yeah. That's what I'm getting so far, but, you know, my perception is always, look, you know, that's what I'm getting so far and how it happened. In some senses, on some levels. Yeah. And just every, like, you all have just been willing to be there for me and be there with whatever it is that's going on with me. And, like, you know, I craved and really wanted to be trusting, you know, to live in trust and to have that and live with that and be that. And there, so that desire, you know, won out over everything, won out over all the baggage that I've had and still have about why not to trust, you know, why to isolate versus moving towards each other. Why to stay an you know, separate or an individual instead of merging, which is not to say that I'm not an individuality. We've talked, we've had to, you know, make differentiations between those words because that's useful. Because we need to trust, and we need to trust each other. We want to trust each other. And it's, you know, there's for me, my sake, there's, like, when I met you, Frank, I said pretty soon it felt like I was coming home. Mm-hmm. Home to myself in a way that I hadn't been at home with myself before. And I think that came from just... from you being at home with yourself and you two being home together and then, you know, earlier on and then you three being home together and just that it could expand into me being part of being home together with you is that's how I'm here or from my perspective that's how what I see. And I had always wanted to have, you know, I thought, you know, after you grow up and you move out of the house, kind of in the back of my mind, I thought, well, you know, obviously I'm going to want to have a family. And that just kept, I didn't know what it was going to look like. And I didn't really have, I mean, sure, I grew up with all these preconceived notions, but I knew it was more about the, not how it looked, but how it felt. So I didn't really care how it looked at all. I never really got that attached to how it looked. I just, how it felt. And so when I said it felt like coming home, you know, being around you all, it's a feeling inside of just total, just being at peace with what I've always been, how I've always been, how you are, how you've always been, you know, what we've all had from the very beginning of our lives and nothing overlaying that. No requirements, you know. Just a real deep acceptance of ourselves as human beings and standing up for that to each other and expecting that, you know, expecting humanity with each other and demanding it with each other. Yeah. not settling for less. Mm-hmm. That seems like that's a lot of how this all came about.
You want me to add to that? Grr. I am L A lazy.
I don't believe that for a second.
Well, you know, I think it has to do with see, I don't know that most people think it's possible to have the thing, you know, however conscious they are of it, whatever degree they're conscious of it, the thing that you think of as like who you are, you know, that tiny little thing in there. I don't know that most people think it's possible for that to include more than just themselves, whatever that means. And so I think most people probably settle for less because that's what they think is possible. And I think that for whatever reason, you know, probably it's similar for, you know, based on what you're saying and Mikey, that didn't work for me, you know, it just didn't work. It's like I wasn't happy. I tried that. It didn't work. And so it was more like just imagining what other possibilities there could be. And so I think that what, you know, now I'm talking from, you know, many years of that, so I'm able to kind of say it more clearly, but I think what it seems like it's about was realizing that it is possible to do that, to not have there be a difference between inside and outside. Mm. You know, like I remember, you know, as a kid and as a teenager, I would read astrology books, and it would kind of like wakes, like I'd feel like that was meaning. It would kind of give me a little rattle that there's something real in there, you know? But it always seemed like it was like way, way out there, like that it was never, you couldn't actually like have that be actualized. And so I really think that's what we're about. What we're about is living our lives from a place of having everything that's in there is here in the relationship. It's all the same thing. And so, so that's like, you know, it's like it came from a place of having no choice, you know, and then, yeah, and being E-N enough. Feeling like you're enough? Well, it appears to be that that's a requirement, just based on watching other people. You know, I mean, there's such a string of people that have come to work with Frank / us, really, you know, that they're attracted in some way by either, like, the feeling or the concepts or whatever. But then it seems like that's often what it boils down to, is that if a person doesn't feel like they're enough, it somehow doesn't quite work out. There's a certain tragic element to it, actually, because what I see is like a lot of people get hung up on like losing their individuality. That was never an issue to me. How could I? You know, I am who I am. How could I lose that? I could do anything I wanted to do. I never saw it as like, you know, giving something up to somebody who's then above me. It just seemed like it was a non-issue to me. But I see a lot of people, that's a real issue, you know, that it's like, you know, I'm surrendering, you know, I don't have power anymore. I never felt like I had was missing, like, power in the realest, truest sense, you know. Although maybe on the surface, you know, I mean, we've had, you know, so many things.
But like, you know, a lot of, like with people in our lives that, you know, like strong women, you know, who would like go through a lot of changes about me being willing to be the person behind the scene who would get to know us. Why aren't you out there, Linda? You know, Frank, why don't you put Linda's name on there too, you know? And it was like, you know, it was trying at times. F, A, fake, F, fake feminism. Right. I mean, this was never an issue for me, but it was trying to deal with it, you know. But so that's why, you know, that feeling of being enough. When, you know, if you know, if you feel that, and then the surface stuff isn't that important. If you know you're feeling true, that, then we are then we are enough. If each of us feel like we are enough, and then if each of us feel that they are enough, then we are enough. Right. Right. So then somebody coming into the relationship isn't as from a lack. It's more from a fullness.
Right.
It is. It is T, not. That's that intense thing you were talking about. Right. Yeah, it's a lot more mundane or hunky dory or something. Right word, hunky dory. L. It is not
glamorous.
G. Oh. Going. Oh. You out. Oh, like to recruit. Right. It's not like a recruiting type of a situation. That's what he's saying. Like, you know, to bring more people into the relationship. It's not coming from that kind of a place.
What?
To F. I. To fill some fill need. Right.
For me, it's kind of like, I guess, you know, when you're born, I think we're whole, you know, and we have a sense of that. Well, we don't know otherwise. And then we get these messages. Well, you're not quite complete. You're not quite whole. You're not quite right. You're not quite okay. You're not really made for this world and all that. And then I think I had to kind of go on a journey to remember that I am whole. I was always okay. And, you know, and we're just hanging out, being whole and okay and enough for each other. You know, that's kind of how I feel. And just, you know, there's work in remembering that. For me personally, that's the work, is in remembering. And I love that word, remembering. You know, it's like remembering my whole body. And for me, that includes other people. And other people may have different roles in, you know, how I live in my body, with my body. You know, I do differentiate. I call some people acquaintances and some people friends and, you know, like that. And it's you know, how we're functioning, what we're doing on a day-to-day basis, that I, you know, use words like that. Those are useful words to describe what my life looks like in mundane terms, you know. But blah, blah, blah. Ramble.
Not A. Not to F. Fill. H. Not to fill holes. Yeah. Well, that, I think that's also has seemed to be a big some people have problems with that. So I don't know that I can say much about that. Not to fill holes. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. Being enough. J. Just. E. X. P. A. Expand. Being enough just expands. Yeah. Yeah. S. So. You are J. You just being T O together to be together. To just being together, to be together. Yeah. Yeah. To. L. To live. Together. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's, it's, yeah, I think it's like, I mean, again, for me, it was more like I didn't feel like I really had a choice. So it made it easier in a way because I couldn't do it the other way and be happy. So, so being together just to be together to live, right? It's like, well, if you're going to be alive, you might as well, you know, be alive in a way that feels full and good and as possible, as wide, as rich as you can imagine. So, yeah, so it's just being together to be together because that's the only way to do it.
Sounds like a more authentic life, an authentic self.
Yes, that's what I think. I think, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. Yeah. We are AI raised, what, two kids? We raised two kids. There were actually five, sometimes six of us that were the parents. And it's pretty cool to see. They're now almost 30. Ouch.
Wow.
But to see, I mean, you know, to see what we did was we pretty much just demanded of them what we demanded of each other. So there wasn't like a big kind of you're a kid thing, you know, which I think like we never looked at them as the children. You know, they didn't get any special... any special stuff because they were kids. It's like, well, you know, you got to be like everybody else or it's intolerable living with you, you know. So we held them to the same standard. And at a certain point, it was like when the one kid was koala, was around 12, he started having weekly meetings with Frank. And so they grew up seeing people go out to the studio with Frank. After he stole some money and let his little black friend take the blame for it. So this was like pretty serious shit.
Yeah.
So that was it. Okay, you're meeting with Frank. And so he did that, you know, for years. He met with Frank every week where Frank would just talk to him about life, you know, about the issues that were coming up in his day-to-day life and trying to get him to see things, how things can be. And, you know, you never know. And then we actually had him as a guest on the show about a year ago. And Frank said, okay, this is your chance. Get back at us. You know, what was it like? It was amazing, you know, because he got it, you know. He said, well, I remember, I think when I was like about 12 and you were talking to me about personal integrity and how you create your reality based on what you do and it doesn't happen to you. And he said, I think I got that. Do you think I got it? And Frank said, yeah, you know, you got it. And he said, and I look around and it seems like most people don't get it now, you know. And so, wow, you know, and they just had, one of their parents just passed away, but at the point when they found out that he was ill and dying, they just, the one, Koala was living in Hawaii, and Kailin, the other kid, was living in like Oklahoma, and Ray was down south someplace living in a trailer and dying of cancer. And when they found out he was ill, they just took it upon themselves, didn't tell any of the rest of us till after it was done. They moved him to Hawaii. The kid in Oklahoma moved to Hawaii. They got a place where they could take care of him, plus their girlfriends. Wow. And they just went through the whole process with him until he passed away. Wow. And it was just like, wow. Yeah. Wow. So that's when we felt like, you know, they got it. Yeah, they got it.
Good role models.
I W S O sold. No, I S O L A.
Isolation.
S U C sucks. The P O power from people.
Doesn't work.
W H I which which is why we were T R A trained, which is why we were trained. Oh, to be isolated.
Yeah.
Right, right. So that we wouldn't have power. Yeah, yeah. Right. There is J. You just one M I S T E R Mr. Oh, there's just one Mr. Right. Two U N E, you never will be S, you are, you never will be sure that he, you will meet him, you will meet him, no, that you never will be sure that you have F found him. Right. So so you're even when you get you find you're in a relationship, even when you get somebody that seems pretty good, you're not sure if he's Mr. Right. He is you. Always are looking. Yeah.
Are you asking me that?
No, yeah, I think, are you asking her that? She said, maybe. I mean, I thought you were saying it, but maybe you are asking. E, I, either one, so it works for him.
Yeah, he's flexible.
Looking for Mr. Right isn't a part of my formula. It doesn't work for me.
How would you K know if he was Mr. Right?
Trust.
She said trust. You would trust that it was Mr. Right.
Or that the relationship had some of the qualities that you were describing.
Right.
It would have to have those elements for me to believe it was the right situation. But I don't know if there's a right one. Not in my world.
Right.
It's too isolating to just find one.
Yeah.
You know, different people meet different needs. One tends to be a little too possessive for me.
I am A D D E L D E L I. Is that right?
Deli.
Deli.
Oh, I didn't mean it like that.
I.
Where are you going with this one?
There's a lot of selection.
Okay.
So, you know, right. It's like, well, you don't feel like salami today. There's a little Jarlsberg cheese and mustard.
Oh,
right. He's a deli. So you say, you know, one person doesn't meet all your needs. He's saying he's a deli. So today you feel like this, he's this.
The world is an oyster, kind of.
I. M E E I meet all needs.
Yeah, we meet them for ourselves as opposed to somebody else meeting our needs.
Well, I think that was part of Frank's rap at the time that I met him was more along what he's talking about now, where he was, this was like in the early, mid-70s, and talking about how that you can have all your needs met in a committed relationship, that if you go if you find somebody, or if somebody will commit to working through the working through what comes up and not walk out on the relationship, that you can get everything met because it will just keep going deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that has proven to be true in our case. That don't mean that I'm not sure what that means. That don't mean
that you S-T-O stop B-E being open. Right, no. This is just addressing the idea that that things kind of are fragmented, like that certain things get met by this person and certain things get met by that person. I think that's what he's addressing with this, because obviously we're open, because you know, not being open is not H E healthy.
Kind of like the operating premise is, you know, we're here for each other for what, like what you're saying, whatever comes up, and that is enough. You know, we're enough for each other. We're enough with each other and feeling whole and but that is not speaking to anything about exclusivity or that there won't be other people that you meet who want to do that same thing too with you, and there's a way to share a life together in doing that.
It speaks more to like surrender, I think. It's like more to surrender, because if you then you're not holding anything off here saying, well, this isn't met by this relationship. So that if you're doing that, and then there's still part of you that's here. But if it has to do with surrender, so you're just kind of, everything you got is just going right in there, and there's nothing you're holding back. And so that's I think, what that addresses. Because once you're willing to surrender everything to another person, and then it makes you absolutely available to everybody else in a real functional way. It's not just like an idea, because you've actually, you get so used to it that you just, it's just the way it is. So that, I think that's what it has more to do with. And being E, being enough, is A, B, A, base. Right. Being enough is a base. Right. Because in the relationship, the kind of the standards or the line is that being surrendering everything you've got. So, and then if you don't do that with somebody else outside the relationship, you're really aware of it, because it's not like it causes a problem in the relationship. Like you have to, because that's like the standard, something like that.
It's like operating no holds barred, or whatever the expression is, and then you find yourself able out of that taking that action, like what you're saying, a surrender, you know, other people who want to share in that, share a life with you, with whatever you're doing, being that way also may come up or may not. That's irrelevant. That's irrelevant. The openness is on the it's kind of like form follows function. So the form of who's in it and who's doing it and who you're sharing a life with follows the function of how you're being, and the function is being open, surrendering, trusting that you're enough. You know.
It's beautiful. It's inspiring to me to hear you speak, to speak your truths, and in some ways risk a lot because society's not always accepting or understanding or open to a different form.
Right.
But I am. I commend you. I.
You're even. Some. S. O. So. Called. R. A. Radicals. Who are you thinking of?
Well, like the polyamory group got totally freaked out by me. They were really freaked out by me. In the end.
Why?
I started a polyamory support group here in Berkeley and was doing it for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And I just, after a while, I couldn't identify with how people were operating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, after working with Frank and understanding that what I was after and what I was doing and how I'd always leaned towards is more having one relationship, and it may be open to having the form of several people in my life who I share a life with. And so the more I was like, that's exactly it. But what I saw people doing in the polyamory support group was seeing all the relationship like separate. Like, I have a relationship with her and him, and we're just trying to make it work out okay that I have these separate relationships and all that. And like,
but not creating family.
Yeah, it wasn't like, not really. Mm-hmm. They weren't really able to perceive that it was really one relationship, which is what I was learning with Frank and everybody, and like trying to talk about that to them. They got upset, you know. They felt very threatened by that. They felt very threatened by that, and didn't want to hear about it. And you know, like one guy dragged his wife to this meet, or I don't know, maybe she wanted him to come, but you know, a person with two women, and he wanted them to just be friends and everything else. But the way his behavior was that he was having two separate relationships. He was having a relationship with her and a relationship with her, and he was seeing them as separate, even though while he'd had the affair with the one woman, his wife was having a relationship with the two of them, but he wasn't really acknowledging that, you know, like through that he was.
Well, anyway, when are we even taught what interconnectedness is? I mean, that word is not introduced in our vocabulary.
Never.
And it's even if it's introduced, it's some biological symbiotic thing. And that has to do with like frogs or some organism in the ocean. It's never applied to human nature, ever.
Right.
We're never taught. Right. On a human level, what our interconnectedness is. We can talk about cells, and we can talk about other life forms, but we never internalize it and take that word into our being and say we are interconnected, and how do we actualize that? How do we become a living organism and operate to help each other and to love each other and to be a family and to be united and, you know.
Yeah.
And we may act as individuals within that family, but we're still we're still blending and emerging and
because they could not control us.
Yes.
If they
goes back to power.
Yeah. They told us about our interconnectedness.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But some R.A. radicals will not see come on the show because of that aspect of our lives. Let's see. Or for B E because the erotic, right? Because of the erotic stuff, they don't want to be part of that. Makes them uncomfortable or something. Like E, F, F. Right. They what are they?
Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is an organization that has to do with the internet. It's like attorneys and for freedom. Freedom on the internet, supporting freedom on the internet. And I mean, we certainly seem like we would be one of the people they would support because we're, you know, this independent organization. We've been doing this for, you know, 5 years, the station and all this stuff. And so Frank wrote to the director and invited her on the show. And was it she wrote back to you? Is that right? I can't remember exactly. But somehow she communicated to us that she saw, she didn't get at all why we would think we had anything in common with her. I looked at your site and I don't see what we have to, in common, why you would even want me on your show. So Frank wrote back and said, well, how's about, and he gives this whole list of like exactly why they would, and we never heard back from her. That was like the end of it. And we were actually, you know, well, they're fucked up, forget about them, you know. But it was actually one of our other DJs, Gerald, when we had told him the story, he really got on our case. B, Black, an ex-Black Panther. And he said, you know, this is what it's all about. You can't let people like that off the hook. You got to go after them.
Right.
You know, that's what we wanted to do, you know. So, you know, we got a list of everybody on their board of directors, and we sent this letter kind of breaking down what had happened up to that point and kind of giving them a hard time about it.
Right.
P, I, piss them off. Yeah, the first response we got was from somebody saying, and you, from one of those guys, and you wonder why we don't want to have anything to do with you. Didn't you see that it said don't write to everybody on the board at one time? Like that, you know? And then, but then we did hear back from another person, and she was willing to be on the show. And she, you know, pretty much said, you know, that they were all pretty uncomfortable with us and the erotic aspects of what we do, and you know, it's true that they shouldn't be that way and they screwed up, but here she is, so let's forget about it now. And so
evolution is slow. Evolution of thought and acceptance and tolerance is very slow. And some people don't get it.
R E A, read.
Do you like me to read
some more stuff? Yeah.
I feel like my stuff is so off the topic.
Then, there, this is N O non. Linear? This show is non-linear.
Yeah. okay. This one's called Say No More. When things began to change, we did nothing. We said nothing. We only spoke of better times to come. When the drought came and the earth became a desert, we thought, we don't live there. That's their problem. So all will be fine, we said. This is just how it is. When the fires took hold and the sky filled with ash, we covered our faces and we waited for it to pass. It will grow back, we reassured. And someday all will be well, we said. This is just how it is. When the earth split open and we could no longer trust the land to be still, we said, we don't have to worry. It doesn't affect us. Sometimes the earth just does that, you know. All will be okay, we said. This is just how it is. When the pollution made us cough and made our eyes burn, we moved somewhere else. We built new cities and new factories and new chemical plants. We enjoyed our progress. And all will be good, we said, because this is just how it is. When the plants and the animals and the insects began to disappear, we constructed breeding facilities. We were so innovative and resourceful. Mm. We put our beliefs in science. It had always proved to be a worthy solution to our problems. And so in time, all will be happy, we observed. This is just how it is. And when the people began to die, we pumped them with pills. We put them on machines. We put our faith in technology like we had always done, century after century. And soon all will be better, we promised. This is just how it is. Until one day, I got sick. Then my mother got sick. Then my sister became ill, and my friends disappeared. And I did start to wonder what to do. Mm-hmm. I thought about our water and our food and our health and our bodies. I also thought about our chemicals and our toxins and our diseases and our machinery. And then I heard on the local news that everything was going to be just fine. Mm-hmm. Somebody else would have all the answers very soon. And we did not have to worry about such complicated mm-hmm. matters because someone in command who is much smarter and much richer and much more powerful had told me that it doesn't matter what I do. This is just the way mm-hmm. it has always been and will always be. So get used to it.
That's great.
Complacency.
But how was that? Oh, off the topic.
Yeah, really.
I-N-T-E-R, interconnectedness.
Yeah, you're right.
Will you read my L E letter to A R
Frank
wrote a letter about Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh God, I want to hear that.
Read it?
I'll read it.
Pulse. It's on the table. Where's the table? In the bathroom?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You've been busy.
You? Can? S? E? E?
C.
C. Oh. Mm. Y. This. S. H. Show. Is. Two. And. A. Half. Hours long.
Oh. Yes. Are you ready?
Yes.
Dear Governor, I'm a 57-year-old guy who would be put at risk by your proposed cut in the in-home supportive services, the IHSS program. I'm typing this with a pointer strapped around my forehead. I depend on all of my physical needs being met by my attendant. I have severe cerebral palsy, which I have had since birth. I have had a wonderful, active, independent life so far, but that would change if your cut goes through and if my regular attendant gets sick, becoming unable to take care of me. I would have no money to hire another attendant because the new person would have to be willing, able to wait a month to get paid. This is unrealistic and would be fatal to me. Here is a poem I wrote. Mutation is evolution. Frank Moore, Friday, April 23rd, 1999. Do you want me to continue? You foolish idiot. You want to make everything, everyone, normal. I want to cure, prevent. Prevent all crips, freaks, crazies, oddballs, slow ones, misfits, bums, artists, poets, and all other impractical, different-looking, strange mutations. You fool! How to condemn the human species to extinction? Look, the game of evolution is change by experimentation. We freaks are the experimenters. The name of the game is flexibly adapting, coping, leaping, risking into the unknown newness of uncontrolled future. We crips, we misfits, have always been the adapters, the leapers. Hell, I'm not wasting my time talking to you about magic and such, just about evolution. Well, if you don't need us crips, us misfits, if you don't need us no more, our advice is don't breathe deep in your airtight coffin of normalcy and move very slowly, very carefully in your thin-skinned world of ever-increasing fragility. Oh, yeah. Good luck. In freedom, Frank Moore.
That's great. That is great. That is really great.
I love that.
Coming out.
Your turn.
My turn.
To A, ask questions.
When did your rebellion and free thinking start?
May. Maybe. In. M. O. R. R. O. Morocco.
Wow.
When I was 8 years old.
Wow.
Is that when you tried to run away from home, or are you talking about just the way you perceived the area, or I S A saw the poor people living on the streets and pooping on the streets and not having anything, and didn't seem right. I S A. I said, I will. H. No, I will translate. He told his mom he was going to translate the Bible into Arabic. To this was the way he came up with to deal with the inequities that he saw, and she laughed. Because she said, well, you don't even know Arabic. And, you know, that was, like, not the right thing to say. So he tried to leave home. He got as far as, like, the path out the door. I. S. L. O. I. Slipped out of my chair and dragged yourself. Or in G. Germany. When. In. B. I. Bitburg. B-I. B. Bible. In Bible school. I. And. No. The. K. The kids. G. A. Gave. A. L. O. O. S. E. A loose. G. A loose girl. A. Hard time. And that didn't seem consistent with Bible. People in Bible school shouldn't be doing something like that. So it was you kind of seeing that things didn't seem right the way they were being presented to you.
Yeah, their judgment was inconsistent with ideas of tolerance and acceptance and loving one another.
Yeah. Yeah. Did not M A match. It didn't match. Yeah. Then A F R a friend of my mother's who was a S E sexy woman in H O hot in hot pants.
Visual imagery.
G. No, S. T. Started. Giving me books to read. They were radical books. And you read a lot. Yeah. So that kind of gave you alternatives to what you saw. Then, there, this was years before I H A had the P O I pointer. So for like for most I think like 16, 17 or something, he could only talk to his immediate family. They had like a code where he would spell. They would go through the alphabet, which is what we still use around the house, but he didn't have a way to communicate to anybody who wasn't part of that, or his mom or brother weren't there to translate.
How did the two of you meet?
You know,
I love
that
part.
Well, I was a travel agent in in on Bancroft Way, and I had moved here like a year before that from Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, and I had like gone to college and was part of this like tried teaching in the public school system in Philadelphia, and then. Was part of like this meditation kind of psychology group, and a young woman had come out from Berkeley to lead everybody through this kind of growth thing. This was in the early 70s, and I did that, and she encouraged me to move. She said, you should move to Berkeley. You should move to Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was already, like, not at home because my school, I had finished school, and I was still at this, like, outside area. And I knew I wanted to get out, and this seemed like a really good excuse. So that was my excuse to move. And then I came out here, and I did that growth thing and was very disillusioned with it. And, you know, it just didn't seem real. It seemed like it was just all poo-poo, you know. And so I thought, okay, I'll get a regular job with regular people, you know. And I had a sense of, like what I was saying before, that I knew what didn't work, and I had a sense, very vague, you know, what, you know, it had to do with community, it had to do with, you know, something I didn't see, but I felt it. And then Frank wheels into the travel agency, and, you know, I'd never talked to anybody that looked like Frank, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, God, I hope this guy doesn't come up to me. And, of course, he comes right up to me. And it was like a ticket counter kind of thing, so I had to lean over to read his board. And I never wore a bra, and I had, like, a loose dress on. So he said he could see down the dress. And he was asking for ticket prices to someplace. And he said, oh, would you like to be in this play I'm directing? There wasn't a play, right? He's just making this up. He said he was willing to create a play. He didn't tell me that at the time, but right, yeah. I mean, like, oh, really? Yeah. I'm like, you know, like 21, 22, something like that. And but what, you know, what really happened was the second I had eye contact with Frank, it was one of those things where I absolutely knew that this was the thing I was waiting for. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just very strong, and something in me was smart enough, I don't know why, you know, that if I didn't at least follow this up, you know, I was full of shit about saying that I wanted something more. Right. And so,
more.
So, you know, he said, well, my wife will call you. You know, I said, oh, wife, you know, cool. He's got a wife. Yeah, you know, that's safe. So, actually, he had two wives and a husband. So I went over, and he had this little room in their apartment that was his, like, little study, and he had a binder full of all his writings. And I just, you know, it's all about relationships and how life works and everything. And I just knew this guy had it figured out, you know. And I didn't have this need to figure it out myself, you know. It was just like, you know.
Right. So here's the blueprint.
Yeah, I know. This is it. Yeah, this is exactly what I was thinking about. And I quit my job in like 2 weeks. Yeah, I started hanging out with Frank, and that was pretty much it.
Wow.
Yeah. And then Mikey was a yuppie, skinny boy with a fancy, expensive haircut, lead singer to an up-and-coming band that turned into Counting Crows. So they were like on a fast track to success. And one of Frank's students, Lee, went to their shows, and Mikey and Lee had gotten together, and she just told him about this work she was doing and gave him some of Frank's writings to read. And he said the floor fell from under him because, you know, he was kind of in it for the creativity, but, you know, the way he tells the story is that there's this fast track that you get on that's just like, you know, you're going for fame, you're going for success, even if that wasn't your original intention. And so he ended up doing he came to a performance is what he did. He came to one of our performances at a record store on Shattuck Avenue. And there's Frank singing and all these nude people dancing around him. And Mikey's like, it was like not his reality.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Are you smashing the dominant paradigm?
Are we smashing the dominant paradigm? Doing our best. Yes. And then Kirsten answered an ad for an actress wanted. And should I tell the story? You want to tell the story?
Yeah, I was almost, well,
more than a year ago now, I was fulfilling prerequisites to go into a master's program in somatic psychology at CIIS, and after much complacency. And it didn't feel, because some things just didn't feel quite right. It wasn't really encompassing everything. That track, you know, I was becoming a therapist, a somatic therapist, wasn't really encompassing everything that I wanted to do. But it was as close as I could figure out at the time, so I set myself on that track. And I went to a movie and saw an ad for an actress, and the character that was described reminded me kind of myself. And I thought, well, I'm not, you know, I've never acted before in my life, but this would be fun, and the character kind of sounds like me a little bit, so how much acting would there be, really? And it would be something fun, and, you know, I haven't made this commitment yet entirely. You know, I can always change avenues if something feels better. But anyway, I just thought for fun, you know, for fun. So I wrote down the information and, God, what happened?
You called.
Oh, yeah. And
that
then
was when Frank said to come to the performance.
Oh, and I wrote down the information on a flyer that I had gotten. I was copying off of a big flyer on a bulletin board, some new women's, you know, lesbian club that I wanted to go to, and I didn't have any paper on me. So I picked up this little flyer there was a whole stack of them, and I turned it over and wrote on the back of it about this women's club, stuck it in my pocket, then went to the movie that night, saw the ad. And then next to it, there was this other poster, and I'm like, God, that looks familiar. And I'm like, take out the flyer, the flyer is a mini version of this other poster. And I was like, oh, Frank Moore is doing this movie.
Wow.
And so I went home, and I'm like, okay, the synchronicities are adding up. This is, you know, I pay attention to this. So I called and left a message, and then, like, the next morning, I go out to the store, and there's a front page thing on the Express with their pictures on it. Frank Moore, once again.
Hello. Sending a message.
Who the hell?
Read the signpost.
Is this person?
I didn't even realize that part of the story.
Yeah. And then you called back and said, and by the way, there's an article about us and, you know, what we do. And, so come on to this show so you can see, you know, what we're into, what we do. And so I went, arrived late.
Did you realize R.E.? Read the article before you came?
No, I can't remember. I think I read it afterwards. I don't remember.
L. Too late.
Yeah. And then I arrived 10 minutes late, and like 2 minutes after I sit down with my friend, Linda says, is the actress who called us about the part here? And I'm like, oh God, now I'm like fessing up to calling myself an actress, which I don't know. How about the person who's interested in acting? But whatever. So I'm like meagerly raise my hand, and they're like, would you like to please come up front? And I'm like, okay. And so he had me wrap his leg. His knee was bugging him, so he had me wrap it in an ace bandage. And
this is while everybody in the... This is like what's going on. This is the performance. Right. Started doing this. Before? What had happened before that? Well, he had tried... He had asked a woman that was sitting toward the front if she would come up and wrap his knee. And she kind of came up like this, but a guy came up with her, and the guy started wrapping Frank's knee. And Frank said, well, why aren't you wrapping it? Because I asked you to do it. And he started speaking for her. Well, I thought she'd be a little uncomfortable doing that.
Wow.
I missed all that. Yeah. I was
whatever happened to feminism, Frank said. So then Kirsten, when he asked her to do it, she just came right up and wrapped his knee, you know.
Right.
Okay, you know, and she just wraps it.
I didn't know that it happened because I was late.
So the contrast was really strong. Wow. You just came up and did it.
And then he asked me to do all these different things, like what did you call it? Follow your friend. Following.
Yeah, there was a guy, Neil, that was disabled, had CP, but he's a dancer. And Frank asked if Kirsten would follow. He would dance and she would follow it. He, you, may know him, Neil Marcus? Maybe not. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So I did that and he asked if I'd read a poem. And...
Ignore that.
And so the poem was, I want to play. And as soon as I read that...
I came to play.
I came to play, thanks, sorry. As soon as I, like, you know, partway through that, I'm like, I can trust this person. And then, which is a good thing.
E, read the poem.
Yeah, okay, well.
We could read it out of the book, yeah.
It's a good thing I was saying. Now I can trust him because, like, I think the next thing he asked me to do was participate in a dance with him that he had choreographed, and it involved me taking my clothes off.
He said it would involve. He said, "Would you do this dance with me? It will involve nudity and rocking on my lap." And she.
Yeah.
We said, really? Oh. Here's the poem.
I came to play. I came to play. Came to the table to play. I don't care what I have to do to get a seat at the table. I play every hand dealt to me, not really caring about winning or losing, or about skill, just playing hands to stay in the game. Yes, I am a dangerous player. Keep on playing. I came to play. Came to bed, not to fuck you, but to melt with you, enjoying mutual surrender, washing pleasure, swept away into oneness, exploring skin from the inside, beyond time, beyond self, into the fun of being, into exploring the furry, cozy, sweating love that can't be confined to the bed, but claims the whole life as its playpen. I came to play, to mix things up, to see what unexpected will appear, to jam with playmates, to lose ourselves with one another, within the playing, the dancing, the touching, the music, into listening and melting. I came to play, playing life the best way I can, always playing against the house, against the odds, not a smart player, never in competition, just keep my eye on the ball, on each hand, on following the every move of Lady Luck. I came to play, often in the lonely fields beyond taboo, breaking through the wall to new possibilities. But I am a team player, always looking for playmates to get muddy or sweaty with, because, truth be told, playing with myself, for myself, has never been fun, only lonely. I came to play with colors, noises, realities, bodies, words, characters, limits, dreams, images, life, death, symbols, magic, and with you. I came to play. And I'm a dangerous player because I don't play for money, fame, power, or from anger, bitterness, hatred, emptiness, or to win. So I can't lose, can't be beaten. I came to play just for fun, just to change everything. I came to play. After all, I want to play with you. We are mammals, after all.
And then she said yes to the dance, and then she did this incredible. I mean, we walked outside of the space and let her read this little description Frank had written, very vague. And then
of the choreography.
Of the choreography.
Dance.
And the thing had to do with, like, Frank sitting and rocking, and there was music. We had a band. And I was nude in his chair. And then Kirsten came in. And
without this.
Without the board, yeah, and pointer. And I think it was you were slowly supposed to feel like you were part of Frank, is that, or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I started in a tight, constricted ball and slowly unfurled and somewhere along the line take my clothes off. And he kept, you know, it always said, you know, take as long as you want for each stage of the dance. And then, you know, just basically unfurling and like kind of finding him and finding him in the room and going towards him and ending up on his lap rocking.
And then I think we read some poems.
Rocking and rapping,
rapping
right?
Rocking. Freaked the band out. We had a band playing. It was two guys and a woman, two horns and a drum. And we knew the drummer. We had met him years before in North Carolina and then just ran into him. He had moved here and he's in this band. And we said, oh, you want to play? We have this new series at UC Berkeley. And they were real excited about it. Wow, cool. How'd you get this gig? And this is their first night playing. And at the point, somewhere after Kirsten's on Frank's lap, and at one point I'm over there rocking with them and stuff, they just pack up and leave. Just like, just go. You know, and, the drummer stayed a little bit longer because, you know, I think he was aware that this was pretty uncool that they had done it, but, oh, yeah, I don't know if you care about that. Yeah.
Good, Mikey.
Do, but S, U, B, but subtle. The big 4 minutes till tape ends sign that we just saw off camera. Yeah,
and well, BCM's not good enough because they don't have a high-tech teleprompter.
Right? That's the article that we were talking about. Yeah.
Who needs it?
Well, do you want to wrap it up or you want to... It's. I mean, how long... So that means we've been going well over 2 hours.
2:36.
Okay. Well, you should tell everybody all the stuff about you that you want, your name, your website, Wendy O'Matic, www. Wendy O'Matic.
WendyOMatic.com. Yeah, there's poetry and my journal and
your book.
What
they
I
can
do
get your book. Where can they get your book?
Anywhere.
Like Cody's and
anywhere.
Yeah.
As long as you have a title and a name, my book is
it's called
distributed.
Redeeming Our Relationships.
No, redefining.
Oh, sorry. Redefining Our Relationships, Wendy O'Matic.
And you put that out yourself, right?
Yeah. Guidelines for Responsible Open Relationships.
Mm.
Yeah. It's self-published, but it's also under an imprint of a larger press, Regent Press.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of Regent.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I'll leave some poetry here and... yeah, and I have a workshop. I left a flyer
here.
And also my website has my whatever events that I'm doing. Like I have poetry. I'm doing poetry at Cafe Dolores at Oral Fixation Night at Dolores Park Cafe, which is January 16th, this Friday. And I'm also teaching workshops through Good Vibrations and UC Berkeley and anywhere people will let me in. And about, you know, radical love and bringing up some of the big themes that we were talking about as well.
Yes. Okay. And Kirsten Rose, of course. Okay. S-E-C. Her. N. Next. N-E. New S show. Whose new show? Kirsten's. Oh, Kirsten's Kitchen will be showing on BTV. Maybe by the time you see this show, it will already be on. Yeah, keep an eye out for it. Kirsten's Kitchen.
What's that about?
About cooking up love together in my kitchen. It's about cooking and talking and being with friends.
Nice. Two. Sharing food. A two-hour show. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. Okay. Night, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for all of you. Yeah.